Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, spiritual, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more important life topics. My name's Tom Tuttle Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for the event. I'm also speaking in Del Mar, California in late April at the Think and Grow Rich Summit. There's going to be some amazing speakers there. I'm almost embarrassed to be in that lineup. It's people like Jeffrey Gittimer, Don Green, the executive director of Napoleon Hill Foundation, and many great other speakers. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1", and that's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. And despite those physical challenges, I always answer amazing when asked how I am doing. You can find out more about me at my website. It's tom2tall.com. And my guest today is the amazing Meredith Elliott Powell. And Meredith is an internationally certified coach, speaker, and business development expert. She's the founder and owner of Motion First, and she helps executives and business owners build cultures that make sales fun, easy, and incredibly productive. An award-winning business owner, Meredith's unique background includes high-level leadership and executive positions in sales, marketing, and finance. Her signature style and her ability to rapidly connect with people make her a sought-after speaker, coach, and strategist. Honors include the Athena Leadership Award inclusion in Verve Magazine's Top 20 Professional Women to Watch in 2010, and a selection as Best Business Coach by the WNC Business Journal in 2008. And she also just signed on with a major online radio network to host her own weekly show starting in June. And I also know, because I have on my desk a copy of her new book, Winning in the Trust and Value Economy. Welcome to the show, Meredith.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here, Tom.
As I said before the show, I have your book, and it is next on my list. Like myself, I know you're a voracious reader, and you prefer to read a number at a time, and I prefer to go at it one at a time. Otherwise, I get too distracted. When I was reading your bio there, I was thinking about business owners build cultures that make sales fun, easy, and incredibly productive. Whoa.
Yes.
If you could put those three metrics into any company, boy, that would be incredible. The word sales and fun don't always go together, but it can, can't it?
Absolutely. I believe that selling should be a fun and an enjoyable process. And really, you know, for me, it's not, when I put it, the reason I have those terms together is I don't teach a process, I really teach a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And sales isn't something, a task that we do that we check off, it's a way that we live. And it's almost as if you're really selling with purpose, that your goal in life isn't necessarily to sell your product, it's to help people. And when you lead with that, it becomes fun, easy, and incredibly productive.
It definitely does. And it also makes rejection a lot easier for the person selling and for the person on the buying end, which is not always good, but for the seller, if you go into it, I have found the way I am with people, I build relationships. So mm-hmm. even if they don't buy what I'm selling now, I'm still always got them in my tickler, in my brain. How can I help? What do I read that could help them? Who could I introduce them to? And when you live that kind of a lifestyle, someone who says no today could say yes 5 years from now, right?
Absolutely. I always say that when somebody turns you down all it means is that you just didn't provide enough value right now. It's not that they're not interested. It's not that they'll never buy from you. It's just that all of us are really busy. Our lives are crazy. So I only have time to respond to things that are of the most value to us at the moment. And unfortunately, many of us are taught to sell in a way that really is about us and our product. And value's really even beyond the old benefit style of selling. But it's about really going in and digging deep and finding out really what it is that the client or the prospect truly needs and filling that need and adding value to it, building trust and building relationship. And then the sale becomes not really sales. They become somebody that you have a relationship, you understand and can proactively provide what they need. But almost more importantly, they become somebody that relies on you to ask you about products and services.
I love that. And when you're in that kind of a position, you're kind of like an expert and kind of like you want to be the person where people think, gee, I'm going to ask Tom about that. You know, he knows a lot of people. He maybe can help me with this. And so you want to kind of be a go-to resource for people, whether it's exactly what you're selling or if you can help them in some way. And mm-hmm. As you said, that's relationship building. A lot of that is emotional intelligence. I'm learning a lot about that. And then, of course, number 5 of Napoleon Hill's success principles is pleasing personality. So that goes a lot into that. Now, tell me a bit about this book, Trust and Value, Winning in the Trust and Value Economy. Zig Ziglar, everybody knows Zig Ziglar, said people will buy from you if they like you and they trust mm-hmm. you and they believe you. Mm-hmm. And so talk about trust a little bit. It's hard to prove to people that you can be trusted. It's hard to trust people, and that's kind of a sad state of being to be in sometimes.
Absolutely. The book, Winning in the Trust and Value Economy, was actually a book that I wrote, but I really feel that had to be written. I've taken it upon myself to name this economy, and I've named it the Trust and Value Economy. Because as the economy started to shift in 2008, working much like you do, as a working in a lot of different industries with a lot of different businesses, I work as a coach and a speaker and a strategist. And what I really began to see, as I'd never seen ever in my career before, was either companies were really struggling or they were having the best years of their life, and there seemed to be no middle ground. And I thought, well, isn't that really interesting? And so I started to sit back and watch and observe, why are companies, what is consistently happening in companies that are struggling, and what is consistently happening in these companies that are just experiencing record growth, like 20, 30, and 40%. And what I started to establish was real themes and very common things happening on both sides of this equation. And that became a methodology of how to win in this trust and value economy. And I wrote the book, which is basically a methodology and a lot of client stories about exactly the steps that you need to take understanding what's different about this economy. Because you set me up beautifully when you said, you know, trust is difficult. We're not always as trustworthy. I mean, not always as easy to trust. And I would argue in this economy, the consumer is less trusting than we have probably been since the crash of 1929. And the reason is because everything that we look to trust and believe in has let us down. I mean, our big corporations, our financial institutions, our government. I mean, we have become very distrusting. However, what I love about this economy is that most business owners that I know went into business because they're passionate about what they do and they're passionate about what they serve. And if you are leading with those things rather than trying to please the bottom line or trying to please Wall Street, this is your economy. You just need to shift things and go about it a little bit differently.
Wow, and that's an exciting concept because so many people just get wrapped up in their business, and when the economy is down and people are talking down and the reports are down, then mm-hmm. they get down. And that's not going to help anybody. Talk about there must have to be some innovation and creativity involved in a lot of the things that you talk about as well, because this, as you mentioned earlier, is not the old economy, knock on a door, make a presentation, close the sale, hope for the best. It's a different economy. So talk about innovation and maybe creativity, how you can, about some of the ways you can have fun, because that's sure. just not a natural thing for salespeople or even business owners during the process.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the first thing that you need to do with this economy in order to succeed in it, in order to win in it, is to truly understand that it is different, that it has shifted, it has changed, it is never going back to the way that it was. And literally, right. economists agree with us. They mm-hmm. say we've moved out of a push economy and into what's known as a pull economy. And when you move into a pull economy, I'll save you the Econ 101 lesson. But when you move into a pull economy, the biggest thing that you need to understand is now all of a sudden the consumer's in control. See, when you think about it, we can buy anything we want to, anywhere we want to, anytime we want to. I mean,
yes.
you know, you could go home right now, sit in your house, get in your jammies, and Google until your heart's content and have the majority of everything you want in life delivered to you.
Exactly.
From anywhere, you know, anywhere in the world. And once that shift happened, it changed everything. What we sell has become a commodity, but how we sell it has become our competitive advantage. And that, to me, is all about, as you mentioned with Napoleon Hill and the work that you do, it's all about connecting with people. It's all about building relationships. It's all about truly being interested in other people. And the first innovative thing that you need to do is use a different sales approach. As I said, sales is a lifestyle. It's not a task.
Right.
So you're not, we have become an instant gratification society. You know, I had a client just this morning who told me, he said, well, I'm frustrated because I don't have more clients. I said, well, tell me what you've been doing. He said, well, I called on these six people last week and none of them are doing business with me. And I said, really? So you thought that you would make one call on these people and two or three of them would want to do business with you?
Wow. And six calls in a week.
Yeah. And I said, that's not going to happen. I said, they, you know, what the consumer, I say that the sales funnel no longer looks like a funnel. It looks like an hourglass. And you have to understand in the top of it, you need a long lead time because
mm-hmm.
you have to genuinely get to know people. You have to build trust. And let me give you a great example. Tom, if I called you right now and said, hi, I'm Meredith Elliott Powell. I'm a coach, speaker, and an author, and I'd love to talk to you about my executive coaching practice because I really think your organization could benefit from it. You've never met me before. You've never talked to me before. You've never interacted with me before. Your response is going to be click or kill the email. Because
yes.
you can get executive coaching.
What does this
coaching.
Lady think she is? I mean, who does she
exactly,
think she
because I'm, you don't trust me because you feel like the relationship is more about me
exactly.
than it is about you. However, if we spend time, if I bump into you at a networking event, I enjoy talking to you, we go, we get, you know, coffee maybe a couple of weeks later, then I bump into you at another event, and then we follow up maybe with lunch six months down the road, and I say, well, I'd love to come by your business and tour it and find out about it. And as I'm doing that, I say, yeah, I've got a lot. Can I just share a couple of things with you? Because I've got a lot of services that I think may be a benefit to you. Now we have relationship happening. And you see that I'm just not dogging you to make a sale. I'm truly building connection and relationship with you. So you got to understand that as you start to call on people, you're going to have a long lead time at the top. Then they're going to buy from you, but they're just going to test you out, buy one product or service, and you better wow them with that experience. Because
wow.
if they don't have a good experience, they're going to go to your competitor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're reminding me of the book I just read, Dan Pink's book, To Sell as Human, and so that
yes.
talks so much about the pull economy, and it's almost reverse logic. In your example there, you could have a relationship with someone and meet them three or four times, and you don't even tell them what you do. You don't approach them about anything. At some point, they're going to be just, like, curious, like, boy, mm-hmm. Meredith's a great person. Like, I'm going to ask her, like, what she does. Maybe I could help her, or maybe I could use her services. And then so people ask you, and what a better position in life to have served people well enough that they trust you enough to ask, is there a way that I could help you, or what do you sell that, you know, maybe I could use?
Right. And, you know, I love what you just said, too, is because what you said was, wow, I'm curious. Meredith is such a great person. And see, when that has happened, trust has started to build.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's and that's why I say it's a lifestyle. It's not a task that we do. We have to go out, and you really have to know in your mind how you can help people. But when you first meet people, you're really at Zig Ziglar's. I mean, the fastest way to get from you what you want is to help others get.
Mm-hmm.
What they want.
They want.
You really have to approach the whole beginning of the sales process as a way to invest in other people and have no expectation of return.
Mm-hmm.
And that's difficult for people, especially as the economy started to shift and things got challenging. We become riddled with fear. And when we become riddled with fear, we want to make sure that we get our own. And it's not, that is one of the biggest differences I see in this economy, is people who sell from a place of power, meaning I'm okay, I don't have to close the deal because I have so much coming through my pipeline, are in a much stronger and much more successful position than those who are selling from a place of real fear and or need, like I've got to close this deal.
Hmm. Who do you work with mostly, Meredith? Is it the small to medium-sized companies or the ginormous Fortune 500 type? Because I would think to implement some of these changes and to add fun into your sales team and into your environment might be easier to do in a small to medium-sized company.
You know, it's I work more with medium and gigornicizer, whatever, however you describe it. but I do keep a few small clients.
Yeah.
And the reason I do is because I like levels of all three because it gives me unique perspective. I mean, there's a lot to be said that you can use to help smaller organizations when you know how to turn a boat in a large organization. At the same time, working with small organizations, what I love about them is that you live closely to the bottom line. You never forget the customer, and you never forget what it takes to earn a dollar. And that is incredibly beneficial when you work in large corporations or government entities where you can lose sight of that.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely.
I like sort of moving between all of them. But to your point, when I work in these large organizations, we don't try to turn the whole boat at one time. We say, okay, great, let's make change here and allow change almost to come from a grassroots level.
Nice. And that's the best way to have it happen.
Absolutely. You know,
people buy in. If you have
your
people buying in, then the change is a lot easier.
And people support what they help create, and
right.
So you need to give them a part of it. I really believe that.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had to give one piece of advice to a CEO or business owner, you got them in the elevator there, your elevator speech, and you're like, oh, Meredith, what would you suggest for a CEO or business owner to succeed in this economy? Because it is a different economy. It's not going back. It's always going to be the same. So what would you tell them, one piece of advice, the top one?
The top one would I'm gonna slide two together because I'm not one that's easy to. I'm gonna talk fast in 30 seconds.
Okay.
I got to go up that elevator. One is gonna be to understand, accept that you are not in control. You can't force anybody to do anything.
Right.
And the second is that connections and relationships are everything. Listen to people around you, your employees and your customers, and they will tell you how to grow your organization. Listen, and get out of the way.
Ooh, getting out of the way, that's not easy.
Mm-hmm. No, it isn't. But it's very funny. When I work in these really large organizations, I see so much pressure being pushed down on younger people on very much top driven. You know, you need to do this, you need to do that. Mm. And all the companies are doing is losing their best employees. Because again, you know, I realize that the job market may be tight, but the job market is not tight for somebody who is good at what they do, and it is especially not tight for somebody who is good at sales.
Exactly. If you are good at sales,
you can go anywhere and do anything.
You will have a job anywhere in the world within days.
Exactly. And so you need to understand, again, I go back to that point, whether it's the customer or whether it's the employee, people support what they help create. Give them a part of it. And quite frankly, CEO, they are smarter than you anyhow.
And if you're a smart CEO, you should be hiring the ones that are smarter than you anyway.
Exactly. And you talk about fun, easy, and incredibly productive. If you engage, I mean, what I really specialize in is engaging the whole team so that the weight of the world is not on top of the business owner, the executive vice president, or the CEO of the company. When you are firing on all of your brain power and you have engaged all of your brain power and all of your resources, that's when a company runs efficiently.
Amen. And then Napoleon Hill, the second principle is the mastermind principle, where you have people working together in harmony, all together, and this is exactly what you have at this point. You have everybody on board, everybody's positive, everybody's having fun. Yes, it's challenging. You still got quotas and all these other things to meet, but have fun with it. Build proper relationships with people, and no matter where you go, your life's going to be better if you do that rather than just try and sell. So we talked earlier about how the consumer has changed, and it's totally changed. Like, it almost a lot of sales, you would think, some people might think, is a commodity these days, because as you said, I could go online and from my office at home here, I could buy a car, a house, a pen, a book, a pair of shoes, everything I want. And then sometimes when I'm tired or grumpy, I might think, oh, I don't want to have to deal with a salesperson.
Right.
And so this is why it's so important for salespeople to be out there helping people, being involved in their community, being involved in networking, being involved in nonprofit work and volunteering. You become a magnet then for people, so that they would rather deal with you than clicking online and buying it, because you can add value that they can't get online.
Absolutely. Research is proving that for minor transactions, the type of sales that don't really make us money anyhow, the little stuff, people prefer to help themselves, so they like the online options. So as a salesperson, it's the kind of stuff you would never make commission really at anyway.
Yeah.
But once the sale gets complicated, or once the issue gets complicated, like right now I want to buy a new cell phone. I'm not going to go online and buy a new cell phone, because I really want to walk in and I really want to talk to somebody. I've looked at about 4 different options, and I want to go in and I want to figure out what those options are. I want to talk to somebody about that. Research is proving that when the sale gets, people start to spend a little bit of money and they may have questions about it. They not only don't want to do it online, they want to talk to an individual. Mm. But they only want to talk to an individual that knows what they're doing. So the world is an oyster right now for a good salesperson.
Mm.
And so there's real opportunity. If you know how to sell, if you know how to build relationships and really listen to people, you're going to do extremely well, because again, research is showing that people they know they can get it online. That's a commodity. To find a really good salesperson, that's rare. So we always want what's rare.
Exactly. And in your situation that you mentioned there, that guy that you, whoever you decide, you go into a shop to look at cell phones, if that person does it properly and builds a great relationship and is so helpful, you want to be a salesperson like that. So even if you decide, okay, well, I got to go look at another store, see another kind, that you would want to be the type of salesperson that once you went to that second store, you would call that guy back, or sorry, my mom always gets upset when I say guy instead of person or female, anybody.
Oh, that was fine.
But you would call that person back and say, yeah, I was at this store, and they said this, and they said that. And that's the type of relationship you build where even if they're not in your store, they're calling you to check up on what they heard or read or learned about. And if you can be truthful and honest with them about it, even if it's a competing product, this is someone that you're going to do business from. You may go back to that first store and find out how you can buy that phone you want from that first person because they delivered more value, they helped you show more ideas on how you can use the phone or whatever case may be.
Absolutely. I just was talking with a friend of mine. My husband and I are big road bikers, and not good big road bikers. We just like it and do it a lot. And a friend of mine is getting ready to ride to buy a road bike, and we were talking about it, and he said, where do you think that I ought to go? And I mentioned the place that my husband and I bought the bikes. Now, you can buy a bike online for less money, but I mentioned the place that we bought. I said, because really the first year, you're going to have a lot of questions. And I said, buying a bike's really confusing. My point is, I recommended this place because the two people that we work with over there are exceptional. I mean, they're full of information, really, you know, great at what they do. And so again, if you're a good salesperson, you know, it will take care of itself. Now, I want to make mention to another point that you made and said how important it is to be out there networking and things like that. And I just wrote a blog about the fact that I believe that cold calling is dead, but networking and branding have replaced what we always knew as a cold call.
Mm.
Because the challenge is that, you know, again, we use the bicycle example, there's a gazillion places that you can buy a bicycle. So somehow you have to stand out in the crowd. People have to have heard of you, know about you, and have some knowledge of the value you bring to the table, or you're never going to get in the door to do business with them, and they're never going to knock on your door. So getting out and getting connected is incredibly important, so you get people talking about you. And getting out and getting connected means traditionally as well as via the social networks.
Exactly. I like the traditional one. I love
yes.
that. And that one is something not everyone gets involved with. What I think of and tell people a lot, volunteering. What an amazing
yes.
thing. Makes you feel amazing. But what I've found so often when I volunteer for various organizations is that I meet kings of industry, movers, shakers, important people, busy people, wealthy people, and they're standing right beside you volunteering at the same event. And so now you've built a relationship where that guy's like, wow, geez, I met Tom at a World Vision event, you know, he's a pretty good guy. If you call that guy a week later, you're much more apt to have that phone call accepted or returned or be able to get a meeting with someone like that. And so this is, you don't do volunteering for that, but this is just something I found, that some of the biggest movers and shakers and nicest people in the world are standing right beside you, and you would never be able to get through them on the phone, but here you are working with them for a few hours.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It is, you know, what you will gain from connections is just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then on top of that, I think that people are truly underestimating how important brand is right now. That, I mean, even things as small as, imagine that you set me up for this interview today, and you sent me a note, and you told me, you know, to make sure that, you know, I had the things prepared, and I was ready to go 2 to 5 minutes before the interview started. And so imagine you're doing your thing, and in I walk 10 minutes late.
Hmm.
Now, we may have done a fabulous interview, but even whether you're conscious of it or not, your trust of me slid down.
Exactly.
I do exactly what you tell me to do. And I'm there, I show up, I'm ready to go when you tell me to be ready to go. Now, all of a sudden, if you're talking to somebody else or you're saying, you know, this and this and, you know, wow, I can't find enough guests for my show, you would be more likely to say, you know, I interviewed this woman, I really enjoyed her, Meredith Elliott Powell, you ought to give her a call. But if that 10, but if I called in 10 minutes late and you're standing there and somebody's talking about it, now all of a sudden you go, well, I don't want to tell my friend to call her because I don't believe that she'll call in on time. So it's everything from how we enter a room to what we say, but every action we take. And it is screaming volumes, again, because the consumer has a choice, because you have 1,000 people you could recommend to your friend to do an interview.
Exactly.
Yep. And so brand and networking have truly replaced the cold call.
It truly has. And one of the biggest branding things, at least for myself, or I think, if people say out loud and online that Meredith Elliott Powell or ABC Company does what they say they're going to do, and they go above and beyond to serve you, branding accomplished. Now,
exactly.
When you have that branding, as you said, every thing you do. For instance, my wife thinks I should get a personalized license plate, but I don't drive like someone who should be able to be identified. And so I say, if I put Tom Tuttle on the back of my license plate with the way I drive, it probably wouldn't be the best branding thing. So everything you do when you brand your business and yourself makes a difference. And boy, that's a big responsibility. But if you hold that responsibility day after day after day with customer after customer after customer, sit back. People are going to send people to you like crazy.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying, is that if you know how to navigate the waters of this economy, you are really going to be successful. And the irony is that navigating the waters of this economy, we are back to a time when transparency, doing the right thing, pay off big time. And we lost that, I mean, which is what we got away from our values as a society, which is what, and I don't mean values in traditional sense or this or that, but just the fundamental things of, you know, doing the right thing, treating others the way that we would want them to treat us. We got away from those things. And when we got away from those things, not wonderful things happened. Now we are back to that type of economy.
Exactly. And I love it. It makes it really
a
great
economy. I love it.
For people who love to help others, it is
an
amazing economy. Now, I was thinking about one thing, Meredith, because I worked for 4 years at a management consulting company, and they're all about metrics and processes.
Right.
And it's hard to metric size. That's not a word. But it's hard to put relationships into a metric. It's easy to measure 80 calls or, you know, 7 of booked appointments. But as we know with this economy, 7 presentations is maybe not what the exact thing to be measuring, but it is hard to measure or put into a metric relationships. But if you can define what that exactly means to you and your company, that's where people come to you and knock your door down to find you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, so many CEOs, I imagine. Is it tougher, do you think, for an older CEO? Now, I'm 49, so older, 50 and above, let's say. Is it harder for them to adapt to this new economy when they went to MBA school 30 years ago and they're still using some of those old school metrics and sales processes?
You know, that's a great question, and I don't find it as much linked to age as I see it linked to a personality style.
Nice.
There are some personality styles, and you know, everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses. There's some personality styles that thrive on change and would change just to change. And then there are some that really believe, you know, well, it worked in 1995, let's stick with it. And you know, interestingly enough, I mean, I'm a master certified strategic planner, and I have to get continuing education for it every year. And when I first went to strategic planning school, we learned that you updated a strategic plan every 5 years. On occasion, maybe you looked at it every, you know, every 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if they say you have to review, when I do a strategic planning process, I have certain tools that I pull out from it that I ask my organizations to review, which they can do quickly, but every 4 months.
Wow.
Because so much is moving, is shifting outside of our world right now, that, you know, the world meaning your little business environment, that could positively or negatively. I mean, imagine in your community, if gas went up or gas went down, how many businesses that would impact?
Oh, incredible.
Yeah. If a major employer was shut down, which when I was a child, never happened. Now, everybody's on shaky ground with a big employer. If the changes with Obamacare go all the way through, I live in a community that's heavily impacted by health care. A lot of businesses are dependent upon it. If it goes all the way through, it's going to have one impact. If it pulls back and only parts of it go through, then that's going to have another impact. So people are sort of standing there watching, realizing they have no control really over how things go one way or another. And you have to be ready to shift and change. So I encourage them to do external environmental scans every 4 months. It says, what's happening outside of our world that could positively or negatively impact our business? And when you can learn to ebb and flow in that, because it's just life, you're going to be able to, you'll be able to capitalize on the opportunities, but minimize yourself from the threats.
Ah, minimize the threats, and that is an amazing sense of assurance for people when you can minimize the threats. Now, you didn't just publish this book, which is amazing, but you went further, and now you've turned it into an online course, which is kind of like a step-by-step process. Do Canadians say process and Americans say process? Or
yes.
Say process? Okay,
yes,
very good.
You
so
got
there
it.
You go. I always remember when I used to be in management consulting, they say, you're Canadian, you say process wrong. So
right.
Your course is a step-by-step process of how to grow your business in this new pull economy. So, which is amazing, because reading a book, very nice, very good, but changing day-to-day behavior, I need a course for that. So tell me about the online course and how that would help a business owner or even a salesperson with their sales.
Well, we are very excited about this course. It's under udemy.com. You can find out about it at my website, which is motionfirstnow.com. But it's done through a program called udemy.com. And basically what it is, it's taking the book, and we've basically moved it into 12 courses where you have the chance through video and through some online learning, through some materials that are available to you online, lots of challenges and lots of exercise that almost take the book and bring it to life and give you the way to translate it into actionable items that you can use inside your business ASAP. The other thing that I love about it is we broke it down into 12 modules. You set the pace of how you go through the modules. So you'll be able to go through it do module one, apply those principles, see how they're working, and if you're somebody who just moves like white lightning, then you can blow right through the other 11. But if you're somebody who likes to sit with things and digest, the other thing is you get full access to me. Email, phone, those types of things, as well as me on the video. And if something isn't working, something isn't challenging, let's reach out. Let's connect. Help me. You know, ask me any questions you want to. So I think of it as a way, if I had to describe it in a nutshell, it really brings the book to life and makes it and puts it in an actionable format, which applies it to your business.
Wow. And I've been negligent up to now, and I just reminded me, because I haven't said the website 9 times, and it's Motion First Now. Motion First is easy to remember. Just add the now part, now. MotionFirstNow.com. So MotionFirstNow.com. And a great website. Boy, you've got videos on there. You got your blog. I'm proud of my website, but a little less when I look at your website.
I think your website's great.
So MotionFirstNow.com, and right on the tagline is a word I'm seeing a lot, more and more, I think, these days, authenticity.
Yes.
Because in the old economy, it was just about selling and closing, and you can think of some of the humorous old sales movies that we all know. And so authenticity, being real with people, and that's a big tagline or a big ingredient for success these days, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Is that, you know, again, people don't necessarily trust at the drop of a hat.
Right.
And so they you know, you have to be authentic. Do you remember sales terms like bait and switch?
Yeah.
If you even try those types of things now, people don't want to have anything to do with you. And the reason they don't is because they don't have to.
Yes.
You know, when I was growing up, we had one department store in town. We were the county seat. We weren't a big town, but it wasn't teeny-weeny. And but we had two banks, a department store. I mean, I think I was well into my late teens by the time we had a mall. So if you went downtown to the jeweler, and you didn't have a great experience in there, you didn't have any other choice but to go back to that jeweler.
Right.
I couldn't Google online and go to somebody else, and there weren't, you know, I couldn't throw a rock and hit another jeweler. If the bank didn't treat you well, you didn't have a whole lot of choice.
Right.
In this economy, you really do. And so you've got to be authentic. You've got to be transparent. And people are so tired of the double talk. We were in the car dealership the other day. I'm looking at a new car, and a gentleman came in. They rent cars on the side. And a gentleman came in, and he'd rented the car for 2 days while he was here in our community. And he went to turn it back in, and I forget what he paid for the two days to rent the car, but it was pretty steep. It was like, I don't know, 2 days, and he'd rented it for $245 for 2 days or something. And he'd gotten a flat tire, and they turned around and they were going to charge him another, I don't know, he'd just gotten something in it, and the tire had been repaired and all was good, but they were going to charge him like another $55 or $60 for the tire. Now, he was out. You know, he lost the car for half a day because he was down on a flat tire. But I was listening to this whole thing go through, and the guy left really mad. And it wasn't the principle of paying for the flat tire, but I thought to myself, these people don't know how to sell. And the reason they don't know how to sell is, here, you gave the car to the guy. So it's not his fault. It doesn't have a good tire on it.
Yeah.
The second is, you're telling a customer they owe you more money at a time when they're already mad and frustrated. And really, this guy's on vacation. Wouldn't it be better to charge everybody like $255 to rent a car versus $245? And if anybody gets a flat, it's just included, and you'll come out and fix it.
All right. Or for $55. Why don't you just, I would have just
eaten it.
Sure, we'll fix it for free. Thank you so
exactly.
much. I really appreciate it. I should refund exactly. half your money because you were down for half a day. Here you go. That guy's going to tell 92 people, and I'm going to have my phone ringing the next day.
Exactly. It was just, But it was such a great example of, you know, of because the way that they had positioned the car was that they had specialty cars for an amazing experience for all these stuff, and every point of touch for him just didn't feel transparent.
Wow.
It felt like hidden thieves.
And when you have people like that in this economy,
yep,
in this day and age, you don't know who you're dealing with that could have 58,000 Twitter followers.
Yes.
And he could say, the idiots at ABC Company treated me like a moron. That's online forever.
Right. That's exactly right.
And
yep,
that's just one thing.
Well, we
that
all
could
know
happen.
The you all know the United Way story where the gentleman in the guitar, he
oh yeah,
yeah, and that's, you know, not United Way, I mean
United Airlines.
And you know, I just heard this morning they got ranked as like one of the bottom five
customer service.
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, for airlines.
Surprising.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Who would have figured?
Yeah.
Very good. Wow, amazing. So I didn't say your website enough. So motionfirstnow.com.
Or
and that's where
Google
they can find
me.
That online course too, right?
They can find the online course. They can find the book. I'm on Amazon as well. Just always know that it's Meredith Elliott Powell. And Meredith has two I's instead of an E and
yes,
an I. Elliot has two L's and two T's, and Powell has two L's. But they can also find me because I'm sure everybody here follows your Blog Talk Radio
yes,
show, so they can find out more information on my guest profile.
I will be putting the book up there and some videos, and people will love it. So I'm looking forward to reading the book, and you've really hit the nail on the head with the new economy, the new way of selling, and having fun. If you add fun to any process, it's going to be repeatable, enjoyable, and it's going to develop good results. So thank you so much for your time. Amazing,
thank you.
Amazing work you do, and I'm looking forward to the book. Have a great day.
Thank you, Tom.
Take care.
Bye.